Tonight is on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
I think I might just give up now because I don't think we will get a better story than a 7-year-old saving the Queen's life for the rest of the show. That was amazing. That was our caller from Montreal. That's my favorite story of the week. And thanks for sharing that with us. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards. He is back in early January. I'll be here not tomorrow night, but Friday night, and then a few nights next week. And then Jimmy's back on the board on News Talk Tonight. So video games and inside the gaming industry, in the large scale makers of these games, they have been making games accessible for everyone for some time. In 2020 alone, the industry celebrated God of War Ragnarok's with approximately 70 accessibility options, The Last of Us Part 1's revolutionary audio descriptive cutscenes, and Forza's Horizon 5 American and British Sign Language interpreters are just some of the examples of the innovations that come from the big companies. But now the indie game developers are also striving to create entertaining and accessible experiences for disabled players. And to help walk me through this and make me understand this, because you might find this hard to believe, I'm not a gamer, is Carmi Levy, a very familiar voice here on News Talk 10. He is our tech analyst. Carmi, how are you tonight?
I am great, Richard. Although I don't know what to say after, you know, the 7-year-old saving the Queen either. I mean, that's a pretty hard story to follow, and I've got to thank Zach for scheduling me after this guy.
Well, that story
pretty much is it.
Certainly did not go where I thought it was going to go. It was amazing. I loved him.
I wonder if he's a gamer. We should get him the next time. Next time I'm back in Montreal, that's my hometown, I'm going to have to look this guy up.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's got to be a legend, at least in his own neighborhood. He has to be a legend for sure.
Right on.
So what has taken indie developers who are, I guess, typically smaller, maybe not as well financed as the big guys, to create entertaining and accessible experiences for differently abled players? What's taken them
I think it all comes down to resources. Up until now, the tools for smaller outfits to develop for accessibility have been more difficult for them to obtain. So if you were, you know, an Epic Games or Activision or Microsoft or Sony, you could, of course, you had the billions of dollars, the thousands of developers, the resources to go and sort of put all these pieces together and say, hey, you know, we've got an accessibility division and we're going to work with you and help you develop those capabilities into the games that you're working on. Whereas if you're an independent developer, which could literally be a small company, a small team, or it could be one person working evenings and weekends. That's common in the industry as well. They don't have access to those resources. And if they don't know, then it's very difficult for them to, after they've developed a game, you know, tested it and are ready to release it, then say, oh, maybe I should have taken, differently abled players into account. Very difficult to reverse engineer it if that's not something that you do or you have the depth of skill. What's changing, though, is that the tools for building accessibility right into a platform are becoming far more mainstream. So, for example, having sign language, like a sign language stream in parallel with gameplay, is now basically a plugin, right? So you can put a plugin into a game and then incorporate it much more easily than programming it yourself. Mm-hmm. The community, there are communities online that will help you if you're a developer figure out sort of what are those best practices, what are the tools, and how do you best incorporate them into your game, not as an after effect or an afterthought, but really as something from right from the start that you can literally bake it in as soon as you start coding. And so there's this sort of sea change, and a lot of small developers going, hey, wait a second, we're even better than the big players because we answer our tweets, we go into Discord and we participate in these community forums and we listen to people, we read the Reddit groups. The big houses aren't doing that anymore, and so they can get that kind of feedback and really hear from the community. Well, you know, you're disabled, what kinds of features would you want in a game? How do we incorporate that in? So the engineering, in fact, is far more personal and direct and kind of right in front of you with a smaller developer than it is for a bigger one. Advantage small guy.
In the Wired article that sort of twigged me to all this, it's called How Indie Studios Are Pioneering Accessible Game Design. It brings up an interesting point in that there is nothing exclusionary to anyone about having accessibility as part of your game. And in fact, one of the quotes that is a pull quote here is, it's about being curious and willing to explore a world you don't understand. So in a way, I mean, we're making it accessible to people who perhaps have been excluded in the past, but really this is for everyone, anyone willing to use their imagination and get out there and just poke around and see what these features are all about.
Exactly. It's not about bragging rights, and it's not about having the physical ability to press a certain sequence of buttons or controls and to do it fast enough so that you can beat the level. That's kind of the old way that gaming was perceived. Gaming kind of has been driven by testosterone for a lot of decades, and probably longer than it should have. And we're starting to see a change of that. It's becoming more democratized. It's not something that teenage kids play in mom and dad's basement anymore. Everybody is a gamer now, and that includes a lot of folks who previously might not have seen themselves as gamers. And so, you know, that change is a good thing because it means that it isn't about beating the level and having bragging rights, and you don't lose anything. The game isn't any less cool of a game simply because it includes a customization mode that allows people to figure out different ways to get through a level, different ways to explore. Gaming isn't just about beating a level. Gaming is about exploring and enjoying the experience. And it's really cool to see, and Wired, of course, hugely influential publication, been around since the beginning of the commercial internet. Mm-hmm. Really cool to see them recognize this sea change in the industry, that gaming really is starting to reflect broader society, and those old stereotypes are starting to break down, and the differently abled community is starting to benefit from that.
Well, it can be seen as a learning opportunity, and I think that's pretty cool.
It absolutely is. You know, like if you're a developer, and I you know, my 9-to-5 job is working with developers. Mm-hmm. So these are conversations that we have all the time. You know, we ask about interface design. We ask about UX. And you know, those questions have to come up because if you don't incorporate that up front, there's going to be a problem later on. And it's going to be a lot more expensive if you try to retrofit it. And so this is just simply, and I hate to break it down to money, but this is really good for business because Let's face it, you know, if you limit your game only to those people who have the physical ability to play it a certain way, well, that's a much smaller market than, say, everybody who may play in different ways because of the way their eyes work or because of the way their bodies work. So you're simply growing your market and you're reaching out to people who in the past might not have bought your game, but I'm betting now they probably will.
Carmi's going to stick around for another segment. We're going to talk about TikTok a little bit, and I'm speaking with Carmi Levy. He's our tech specialist and a journalist. But one question in the last minute here that's on topic with the video games. I'm a film critic, as you know, and people have been telling me for years, oh, video games have replaced movies. We gross more. Video games make more money than most movies, and I've always sort of pushed back on that. What's your take?
I think they complement each other. I think many of the best video games of all time have some kind of tie into the movie industry. One cannot exist without the other. In fact, the two of them are two sides of the same coin. It's a different form of entertainment, maybe a little bit different when it comes to interactivity. But literally, most of the biggest gamers are really big into movies as well. It's not an either or proposition. In fact, gaming became big because movies tell the story that drive a lot of the biggest games today, and vice versa. A lot of the biggest games, those features from interactive games are showing up on the big screen as well. They're both awesome, and we all win.
I'm speaking with Carmi Levy, tech journalist and all-around good guy who helps us out all the time on this show, and I'm so happy to hear your voice tonight. Carmi's going to stick around for another segment. We're going to talk about TikTok. We touched on this last week. I don't think we really dove into it, though. We're going to get to the bottom of the story of why the U.S. government bans TikTok or has banned TikTok on official devices. That will come up next on News Talk Tonight. I'm Richard Krause, sitting in for Jim Richards. Carmi Levy back in just, I don't know, a couple of minutes. Stay with us. Lots more to come.
Talk Tonight continues on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
I'm Richard Krause in for Street Fighting Man Jim Richards, who'll be back in early January. You're listening to News Talk Tonight, and we left in the middle of a conversation with Carmi Levy. Carmi Levy is a journalist and our tech expert, and we've talked about video games a little bit. Now I want to talk with Carmi about TikTok. Many of us out there probably use TikTok. If you don't, your kids absolutely do. And it is, for me, a place where there's great cat videos, and there's the Wednesday dance from Netflix, from the show Wednesday, that went crazy viral on TikTok, but I don't really give it a whole lot of thought, but we should. And this is where I'm going to bring in Carmi. Now, Carmi, we talked about this a little bit last week, and I think that most of us understand how social media apps like Twitter or TikTok mine some of our information, but can they also be a national security risk? Apparently, the U.S. government thinks so, because they have said we're going to ban TikTok on official devices.
Well, the thing that we need to know about TikTok is that, unlike YouTube, unlike Instagram, unlike pretty much every other social media app that we use, it isn't owned by an American company. And the data that it collects on us, there's no guarantee that it's stored in the U.S. It's owned by a company called ByteDance, and that's a Chinese company. And ByteDance, of course, we know that Chinese tech companies have to sign a deal with the Communist Party of China. It's a prerequisite of doing business in China. And if the Chinese government comes knocking on their door and says, we want your user data, we want access to it, you kind of don't have a choice. That's just the way it works in China. The company says they've never signed that deal. They've never been asked. If they were asked, they would never turn it over. They swear six ways from Sunday that the data isn't stored in China, that it's only stored in the U.S., and that it's protected from China by technological, what they call firewalls, that the government there can't get access to it. But the thing is, and we know this because we've seen analysts pick TikTok, the app, apart. TikTok is a very aggressive data gathering app. In fact, it collects more information about what you and I are doing on our smartphones than pretty much every other social media app out there. It's very, it soaks up a lot of that information, and it does things that it probably shouldn't do. And the company has been criticized in the past for that sort of stance, for that architecture. So you put it all together, and that is an issue. For example, if you're a U.S. government worker and you also are a TikTok fan, sure, you're sharing videos of yourself dancing and, doing all sorts of silly and crazy things. But in the background, where's that data going and who has access to it? We just don't know. That presents a national security issue and risk if that person who owns the phone is, maybe a high-ranking member of the U.S. government. It's the kind of thing that keeps some people up at night, and it should.
You talk about ByteDance saying, oh, we have a firewall that protects all that information. And I think the term firewall is now quaint. I think there was a time when people said, oh, they have a firewall. Well, everything must be secure. Now I think people realize that that doesn't really mean all that much, does it?
It doesn't. We tend to think, build a very thick wall, mm-hmm. and it'll keep all the bad stuff out and the good stuff in. But we know the technology doesn't work that way. Just take a look at your smartphone. Yeah. You probably have a few dozen apps on your smartphone. I know all of our listeners do. And each one of those apps is soaking up information, not just on how you're using that app, but on what other apps you're using on the phone, your location information, who your contacts are, all this other sort of, data which individually doesn't look too threatening. But when you put it all together, can be pretty devastating if it's in the wrong hands. And so all of our apps are already doing that individually, and they're sort of sending it out. So where's the firewall, right? Install an app, you give it the right to do this, and there is no protection. We've willingly consented to sharing our most personal private information with companies we don't even know. So you're right. It's absolutely quaint. It's completely obsolete. And I think, the interesting thing here is that we've allowed this to happen. Nobody bothers reading the terms of use of TikTok or any app. And we're literally, we voluntarily consented to all of this information being lifted off of our phones, all because we want to share fun dancing and cat videos, which just strikes me as, it's so 2022, almost 2023.
Information is money. And so do you see a time at which laws come in? Because we have to remember that all this stuff, I mean, you know, 20 years ago, we didn't have smartphones. And I had a flip phone for ages. I've had a smartphone for a decade now, probably. But I didn't really think about it because it's been incremental, I think, the amount of information that they've taken over time. And so do you foresee a time when somebody steps in, the government steps in and says, all right, no more, you can't mine information, mine these apps anymore. What happens then? Because that's where they're making their money.
I think we're already starting to see that to a certain extent, certainly. And I think TikTok is the canary in the coal mine because it's the most obvious. It's the most popular Chinese app. It consumes a lot of data and all that. So right now there's this huge $1.6 trillion omnibus spending bill. Tagged onto that is if Joe Biden signs it into law, TikTok will not be allowed on any federally managed device. If you're a federal employee and you have a smartphone that's issued by your employer, guess what? You got to take TikTok off and you won't be allowed to download it. There are also the U.S. House of Representatives. They've just banned it on their devices as well. So it's kind of the same thing. And 19 states have enacted a similar ban on state-controlled devices. And there's legislation pending that would make TikTok illegal in the U.S. In other words, everyone in the U.S. Now, will TikTok be going dark anytime soon? No. But what it means is that you're right. I think that line is finally starting to be drawn where we realize that these apps are putting us in mortal danger of our privacy being compromised in ways we can no longer control. It presents both individual risks as well as risks on a society level and a government level and in a geopolitical level. And something's got to be addressed. That balance, we're not in balance anymore, and we need better laws to protect us. And I think 2023, it's starting off. TikTok is the canary in the coal mine. We're going to see it starting to apply to other apps soon as well.
But without data mining, Facebook won't exist. Twitter won't exist. I mean, none of these places will be able to make a go of it.
Well, they won't be able to serve up ads. Like, sort of the basis is we don't pay for those apps, but advertisement pays the freight. And what makes advertisement worthwhile is that the algorithms know a whole lot about us and they can serve up just the right ads. So Richard gets different ads than Carmi does, who gets different ads than Zach does, because each one of us have different preferences. So if we shift away from this ad-driven algorithmic model to maybe subscription basis or some other form of revenue, maybe the industry can figure it out. They've reinvented themselves before. Maybe they'll reinvent themselves again, because from where I sit, you know, we've been through this with Facebook. Remember Cambridge Analytica? All of this free app stuff, probably not good for our mental health. And so maybe it's time for us to maybe re-architect it and come up with a better way.
If there was just have a minute left, if there was one app that you would download and feel comfortable with, what might that be?
Oh, none. Literally all. I know this sounds terrible, but all apps give me the willies. And there's some days I stare at my smartphone. And I mean, look, this is the core of my business. So of course, I have to use it. But some days I stare at it and I really do feel that, you know, my life would probably be better off without all the apps, without the smartphone, without all of this connectivity. Some days I would just love to go live in a cave for a little while and enjoy the peace and quiet and enjoy the not having to worry about, gee, where did my data go today? So I know that's not going to happen. I think, the horse is out of the barn. It's never coming back. But I think it'd probably be good. Maybe if we reflect on anything as the new year dawns, maybe start to think about our relationship with our smartphones and our apps and maybe start dialing it back. We can't get rid of it completely, but maybe dial it back a little bit. Only use those apps that we really need. Get rid of the rest.
Ironically, on social media today, I saw a meme that said, all right, you have to give up your phone. You get no communication. You got to live. Now we'll give you food, shopping, you know, wood for making fires and that kind of thing. You're remote. You're not going to be in contact with anyone. And at the end of a month, we'll give you $100,000. Could you do it? And people were like, I don't know. Maybe. Maybe I'd try. And I thought, wow, we are addicted. Carmi, thank you so much for chiming in here. This is Carmi Levy, journalist and tech expert and the man to speak to when you don't know what you're talking about, which is me when it comes to technology. Thanks so much, Carmi.
Really appreciate it, Richard. Thank you.
I appreciate it. When we come back, it's a segment called Ask a Blank Anything, and we've got a good one. Ask a Bar Owner Anything. You can call me, Johnny from Sauce on the Danforth in Toronto, joins us next.